freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
I don't know about some of the responses here. I did post the picture of my dog, Gertrude. Walking with her dog umbrella and asked if it was going to make her soft, as you suggested, Brock. And I don't know about some of the comments. Going to, says Michael. How dare you? Ryan says, oh, she's going to lose her dog card. Yep, that's true. She might. Mm. And then Todd says, it's worse than I imagined listening on my drive into work. All right. See, that's not right. How dare you, Todd? That's just crazy. Soft. But soft. Other Frenchie owners get it. Paul says, hey, Mike, Frenchie owner here. Where did you get that? My dogs need the same thing. See, Frenchie, it's a community.
Can you imagine walking with more than one of those?
No.
Impossible.
Absolutely not. No, one is more than enough Frenchies for me, I can tell you that. All right, we're gearing up for the draft, Brock, and you are on the college football circuit throughout the football season. You get to see these guys, talk to these guys, talk to the coaches, learn a lot about them, and you always have your own unique insight as it comes to the draft. Here's another player the Seahawks should think about, according to Brock.
The Seattle Seahawks select.
This is Brock Heward's draft profile.
But you want traits? Check. You want a vocal leader? Check.
At the end of the day, you have to say, okay, what's best for the organization?
Can you make people around you better? And can you bring people together?
Every day at 9 a.m. leading up to the draft.
Yeah, today is inside linebacker Peyton Wilson from North Carolina State. Had a North Carolina boy on earlier, and Sam Howell. If you missed that, go back and listen to it. Sam was great at 7:30 this morning. Peyton was also committed to the Tar Heels. He was going to go to Chapel Hill originally, and then he decommitted and became an NC State Wolfpack linebacker. And boy, what a linebacker he became. In fact, he won the Butkus Award. That goes to the best linebacker in all of college football. He won the Bednarik Award. Goes to one of the best defensive players in all of football. He was a unanimous All-American and a two-time All-ACC performer. This is a position of need. There's wants, and then there's needs. You need interior offensive linemen, and you need linebackers. Yes, you paid a couple guys on short-term deals and one-year deals for Dotson and Jerome Baker, but you need other pieces in there. Mm-hmm. And this guy is twitched up now, man. He is 6'4". He's combine. He was 233. And I think, again, counsel agent said, hey, cut a little weight because he played at about 240 in college. Cut a little weight and be as explosive as you can possibly be. And boy, was he ever at the combine. So he ran at 6'4", 233, a 4.43 40.
Wow.
That is wide receiver. That is faster than Roma Dunze ran at the combine. That is a fast wide receiver speed with a 10-yard split of 1.54. He jumped nearly 35 inches and broad jumped nearly 10 feet. Dude is twitched up. Now, this is one of those guys, and I told you over the course of the next 18 days or 18 profiles, a lot of them I've seen in person. A lot of them I've got a lot of just background and sat in meetings and with coaches and watched practice. There's going to be a few, like Peyton, that I did not see. He was in the ACC, a place I have not been the last 5 years. But I was going to have him in the vaunted NC State UCLA bowl game, that holiday bowl that was not to be, canceled the day of the game, unfortunately. And I remember leading up to that game, looking at this dude's productivity and thinking, man, this guy is just, he is long, he is fast, he is twitchy. This dude's a playmaker, and he was super, super productive. But if there is one player in my 20 draft profiles that will fall under the medical decision more than anybody else, even more than Michael Penix, it's going to be Peyton Wilson. Because the medicals will tell everything of where he falls. Tore his ACL, missed his senior year of high school. Tore the ACL, missed his freshman year at NC State. He turns 24 in 3 weeks because he was there 6 years. Had another season-ending injury in 21 as well, his then sophomore year. So two season-ending injuries in college, a season-ending injury in high school. Around all of that was, I don't know, 39 tackles for loss and 13 sacks as a junior in Ohio State and Clemson, and everybody came out of the woodwork wanting him, and then missed his senior year, and as I said, ended up at NC State. Two ACLs, three season-ending injuries over his career makes you really, really nervous. Can I throw in on the positive side a state wrestling champ at 220 pounds in high school too? Leverage, toughness, agility, got all of it. Checks all of those boxes and is an absolute need in a pretty lean draft for inside linebackers. You're going to hear me talk about Junior Colson in a couple weeks as well. Big kind of thumper out of Michigan. I think it's him and I think it's this kid as far as need goes. But this injury list is scary, and this is one that Sam Ramsden and the medical guys there and the training staff at the Seahawks may give a go or no go and just simply say, can't do it. Can't draft him in the first couple rounds because this injury history is too debilitating. You're not going to get the most out of him. And or it could be, nope, kind of like Penix, clean bill of health. Those things are all in the past. Played the last two seasons, played phenomenally well. And it's got a frame that can sustain in the NFL. This will be a medical more than anything else moving forward for Peyton.
Interesting. Great stuff. All right. So another linebacker to think about there. I don't know what. Did you have an opportunity to see Matt Miller's 7-round mock today?
I did not.
It's kind of interesting. I'm obviously not going to get too deep into the players that they were drafting in the late rounds because I didn't know that much about them. Although he had a 4th-round safety from Utah, Brock, that he was like in love with.
Don't tell me, Cole. Don't tell me,
Cole.
Oh,
it was.
Gosh. Oh.
Yep, he mocked him to the Seahawks.
He's not
going to
be there
him.
In the 4th round.
No?
No, but I love that dude.
Yeah, so does he.
He's going to be in my top 5.
Yeah, he loved him. And he had him going to the Seahawks at the beginning of the 4th round.
Well, that would be awesome. If he lasts to the 4th round, that would be a home run for me. So he will be absolutely one of mine. Go ahead and give it to me. Yeah, give me a few of them.
Give me a moment. I don't have it all in front of me. But I was going to tell you what kind of jumps out when you look at it. He had Fautanu as the 16 pick.
Nice.
But as you're sort of scrolling through and you're like, okay, who are they going to pick next? And you start scrolling. And you start scrolling, and you start scrolling.
It's a while, right?
It is a while, and you're seeing a lot of the names that you know come off the board. Now, look, the fact that I know the names doesn't mean they're going to be good, but you just start seeing all the names that you know that you sort of kind of get a little attached to at some point during the process. And you're like, oh, there goes T'Vondre Sweat. Oh, there goes this guy in the second round. Oh, there goes this guy at the beginning of the 3rd round. Oh, there goes Penix with the pick you traded to the Giants.
Yep.
Oh, there goes, like, it is.
It's a long drought.
It's a long way to the sort of middle of the 3rd round.
Yes.
And then, you know, you're it's.
Yep. And a lot of good players, a lot of starters, a lot of difference makers.
Really hard to not have a 2nd round pick.
Man, really hard to believe that you're going to then just sit at 16.
It's hard for me to imagine.
Yep.
It's really hard to imagine.
If for all
that's
of these years and all of these times that you have traded down, and this is a time to build up that roster, and this is a time to add more, this feels more than ever that's not going to be the case. It's not going to be 16 in mid third. It's going to be maybe trade down to 26 and then maybe trade down to 32 and then have 2 or 3. Salk, with all those familiar names in the 2nd and 3rd round, have 3-4 picks in that area where you can find a little more depth than just one marquee guy.
All right, good stuff, man, as we continue to get ready for the draft less than a month away. What is it? It might actually be exactly a month away.
It is exactly
away,
4 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah.
Exactly 4 weeks.
How about
from
that?
Tomorrow.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah, looking forward to that. We're getting real close. Okay. Coming up, we'll give you guys everything you need to know as we get ready for opening day, which is a lot closer than that. Opening day, of course, is tomorrow. And you can come down to the Hatback Bar and Grill for a little live broadcast. Wyman and Bob, 2 to 6. Celebrating the start of Mariner season, Hatback's going to be hosting pregame festivities for all ages. And those begin 3 hours before first pitch with food trucks and tailgating games, music, and a whole lot more. For more info, go to hatback.com. We'll come back with everything you need to know about that game and a whole lot more next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Starting to get a little giddy as tomorrow we begin the journey of baseball season once again. They finished up the spring with a final exhibition game in San Diego yesterday. Julio hitting another home run. Dylan Moore went yard. Pretty nice day for Casey Lawrence, who went 5 strong. You may see him at some point this year, would be my guess. He's been around the big leagues for a while and could be, a next guy up type of mentality, assuming that they need more in the starting rotation. As for Scott, he had taken a lot of questions about the bullpen over the course of this spring, and he's finally starting to feel good about it.
I feel better now than I did. You know, when Santos and Brash went down early, this bucket that we had of guys potentially to help us out obviously became more important. But those guys have had good springs. They all do it a little bit differently. They're unique. Some guys lean more on, a riding fastball. Other guys more on the breaking pitches. Some guys have a combination of both. But they're nice options to have. We did a really nice job bringing in guys that could help us. We've had good luck with guys. We have a story to tell. That's why we're able to get some of those better guys that are seeking opportunity. And then maybe we can match up with them with what our pitching people have done to help guys out. And it seems to have worked. So I think when they look up at, you know, mid-season or at the end of the season, our bullpen always evolves and changes. But we've got really good options.
I think that's good to hear. I'm going to kind of dig into this in about a half hour, Brock. But I think one of the best things that happened this spring is that they signed Ryan Stanek.
Correct.
I was watching him pitch the other night.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Well, we watched him for a lot of years in Houston. Dude throws really, really hard.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, that's exactly who Scott was talking about. When you've had success and you've developed guys and you've grown guys that maybe were stagnant in their career or otherwise, that is exactly who you're pointing to. He's a free agent. Thank goodness he was out there on the market and they spent to bring him in. Mm-hmm. And he and Mooney are going to have to carry the load here in April. So, you know, until Brash and Santos, we'll see. Until those two guys come back, there's going to be a bit of a load and really leverage situations for those guys to stand up and deliver.
I think very much the case. Nelson Cruz is going to throw out the first pitch tomorrow. He will join us at 9:30 tomorrow morning. And then, of course, we'll get to watch Luis Castillo, La Piedra, The Rock. Did you see any of the behind-the-scenes of his new commercial?
Bro, those are tremendous.
Pretty awesome, huh?
And remember, I'm going to get to hang out with The Rock, the actual other Rock.
Right, the original
really cool.
Rock.
Yeah, like Dwayne, the actual Rock. So I'm going to get to see him down in Texas and kick the UFL. That was beautiful.
Good, man.
It was beautiful.
It is pretty good.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
We've been talking a lot about the Seahawks today as they get ready for the draft and also just meeting with the media over the last couple of days. We started to hear more from Mike McDonald. He's very direct, and I kind of like and appreciate that part of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Here he is talking about what he's seen so far from Devin Witherspoon.
An awesome guy, just a lot of enthusiasm. He's going to bring energy to our defense. Even though he's young, like, you know, you can still lead from your particular role, so we expect that from him. But fun guy to be around, man. He just brings a lot of spirit and, you know, the type of energy that we want on our defense. But he can do all the things. He's playing nickel, moving around sometimes. He's, you know, we can hide him, we can match him up outside, all those types of things. There's some things I've gotten on him about that I've seen on tape that I'm giving him some crap about. But, you know, that's just to keep him on edge and hopefully keeps growing.
I'm already starting to have some of those conversations with him. I like that.
Yeah, details matter. All right, you're going to have to do this. Now I'm going to hide you. I'm going to move you. You're going to get to blitz. You're going to get to be a hybrid dude in so many of these different spots. And this scheme should really accelerate all of his skill sets. If you're Devin Witherspoon, you're excited about this thing kicking off. And as Sam said, it will just be about a week and a half, April 8th. 2 weeks before everybody else with the new staff, new regime to get started in this new program.
I didn't read you this quote earlier, but I really like this one. This is on the Blitz quote that you referenced earlier from McDonald yesterday. Hey, if you want to play defense for us, you've got to be able to blitz. Whatever your one-on-one is, we expect you to win. We carry a team pass rush mentality. It's not going to be built around one guy. It's prudent to let everyone have a chance to win on any given play. But if you're going to blitz from off the ball, we expect you to win one-on-one. Those guys are going to hone their craft and figure out what moves work best for them. And when the matchups are in our favor, hopefully we're going to take advantage of those things. There's no nonsense here, huh?
You earn the right to rush the passer.
Stop. I know you don't like that.
No, I do like that. You earn the right.
You just didn't like it as a,
I didn't like it as
team
a whole
identity.
Mantra. No, that's not. That shouldn't be your whole team identity. But it's very good mentality for a defense. And when you get that right, you get that opportunity, you got to go win it.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Kraken snapped their big losing streak with actually pretty good effort last night. They played hard. They played well. The young kids came in and made a difference. Logan Morrison, Ryan Winterton, and Ty Cartier was actually a pretty fun line to watch throughout the night. And the first line played pretty well. Decord played well. So they cruised to a 4-0 win. And, of course, the other big news yesterday, the controversy, the scandal of Pat Chun going from Washington State to Washington to be the new athletic director.
Yeah, well, Kyle Brown, our esteemed program director here, also esteemed kook, as in drives his RV over there and watches so many and has watched so many of those Coug games as a faithful alumni. He'll fill in more of the details. So I know this kind of secondhand and some firsthand with everything that's gone on over the last year, 2 years in all of college athletics, and in particular in Pullman and Corvallis, where they're left holding the bag and by far the most damaged of anybody in the sport. But yeah, this is a hard one for many of them to absorb. Like, go anywhere else, Pat. go anywhere else, but don't go to that school that in many ways so many of the alumni view as the last one. The president there and Classe and Jen Cohen were the last ones that could have saved their livelihood, saved their profession, saved their opportunity to keep a conference together. And when they didn't, there's even that much more animus, a lot of which Pat Chun threw at the university. And ultimately, the university says, come on, come on over here to the Big Ten and come lead our athletic department now.
All right, that's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. Whew.
Gosh, the college athletic cycle hasn't really slowed. The Mariners getting going with opening day hasn't slowed. The whole NFL offseason hasn't slowed. It just feels like there are so many things just kind of spinning around.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be really nice. I could listen to Scott yesterday in that post game and a bunch of those cuts that you played. You could feel it in his voice. Like, okay, let's go. Dress rehearsal. Over.
Right. Get into the normal rhythm of a season and just kind of start the everyday element that is baseball.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing it for now 6 weeks and it's not counted for anything.
Right.
Right. So like, hey, man, it's all great. Everybody getting back together, getting back. You see all your buddies from you know, summer school ending and, hey, you know, start of school and that's cool. But all right. After
can
like four
we
or
make
five
this
weeks.
Serious?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, can let's we make go. This matter?
Let's go play. Yeah. Let's go play.
All right. Well, I'm going to give kind of a recap, final recap of the spring coming up here in ranked in about 20 minutes. But yes, a man who has not been on this show in years. He used to be on it every day, and we haven't heard his voice in years, Brock. Or at least the people haven't. You and I have. It's next on Brock and Salk, Seal Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, it has been years since you guys have heard this voice on the radio. He went from being our intern to, and arguably the best intern we ever had. Now
I'd say Mac from Australia, but that's fine.
I wasn't around for Mac, so, and I think
I
he was from
Mac
New Zealand.
Here today.
Pretty
Where
sure
Mac? Mac.
Pretty sure Mac was from New Zealand,
Where
but
are
I,
you, Mac?
I wasn't here that year.
Same difference.
Kyle had the advantage of going up against Nat, who, as you may remember, erased every single thing in our audio system, and also once slept until 2 a.m.
Slept through the show that was 11-3.
Not a great day for Nat.
It's hard to do.
But then we ran into him in Ireland, which was also kind of weird. In any event, Kyle went from being our intern to our board op to our producer to the APD here, and now he's our boss. And
Lumberg four.
Whatever Lumberg you want to throw on him, it gets kind of confusing.
A little nebulous in there.
But in addition, Kyle, to being a I can't even look at him without laughing, to being a long-time member of this show, you are as diehard a Cougs fan as you're going to find.
Correct.
How did the news strike you yesterday that Pat Chun was leaving to go to Washington?
I was numb, I think. It didn't strike me too hard. It struck me as something that was inevitable since August 4th, 2023, when the Pac-12 dissolved. And I knew on that day, okay, Pat Chun will be leaving. Jake Dickert will be leaving. Kyle Smith, Cammy Etheridge, any notable figure in the WSU athletic department will be gone within a year and a half of that date. And now we're already halfway there.
The defense rests.
But Kyle Smith to Stanford makes sense. Wherever Cammy's going to go makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
Pat Chun to Washington?
Pat Chun was going to leave.
Pat Chun, after years, and especially the last 9 months of the hostility, the, you know, the animus, the barbs, the everything thrown at the leadership of the University of Washington, the president in particular who's sitting in that seat right now, who he's going to work for. Washington, Kyle?
Washington hurts, okay? Washington hurts. Pat Chun was going to leave.
There we go.
Pat Chun had interviewed in Northwestern at Miami. Okay, that was fine.
Just because you were expecting the worst doesn't mean it doesn't hurt.
Pat Chun going to UW after Pat Chun was kind of leading the, like, can you believe these people? Pat Chun was calling his now boss a snake. I mean, the UW president stabbed him in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they must have wrote him a really nice check. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, Pat Chun, I view it through a Coug lens. I'm a Coug alum. I've been diehard Coug my whole life. Pat Chun doesn't have that loyalty to Pullman,
right?
To Washington State. Pat Chun's there to do a job.
Kyle, what has happened to you? I had a dear kook friend of mine, a former player over there, say if you tweet anything and you don't include the word betrayal, deceitful, self-serving, disloyal, cunning, selfish, greedy, bully,
that's true.
I am done with you.
I'll sign up for all those.
Do you really think he was any of those things?
Duplicitous,
was
certainly.
He?
I mean,
I don't think
he was leading the charge about how UW destroyed the conference, left WSU high and dry. And now, you know, the second they take the knife out of his back, he's like, well, I mean, it does look pretty good over there.
I mean, I guess I just look at it from his perspective and say he fought the good fight. He did everything he could possibly do to try to save the program. It didn't work ultimately. He tried, as you said, he's not a Coug by birth. He came to it as a job, but I thought showed unbelievable loyalty, doing everything in his power to try to salvage what was a horrible, horrible situation that unfortunately was just not a winning hand. And when it finally went down the tubes, he was offered a lifeline, and the fact that the lifeline came from Washington in some ways makes sense because it's the closest school and he ends up coming here. Like, I don't see how you could be mad at him. I feel like he did everything he could possibly do.
If he had taken this job when Jen Cohen left.
Totally different.
In the fall when WSU didn't, I mean, we still barely
have a conference. Still fighting and they were still
in court and they're looking for a football schedule and to join a basketball conference. I mean, that would have been... carry him out of here, get him out of the
state. But that's not what happened.
That's not what happened.
The thing's done.
So, Kyle, is this the sentiment that you feel from your other alumni and brethren?
This no, calm, absolutely cool, not. But
huh?
Maybe I had the advantage of working in sports for the last decade, and, like, you know, you see this happen. Again, it was Friday, August 4th, 2023. It all destroyed. It was all over. It was done. It was just a matter of time. We're just on a slow death march heading to an inevitable conclusion. And Pat Chun was just the next one there, and Cammy Etheridge will leave in a week or two and get another, you know, the women's basketball coach. And if Jake Dickert's season hadn't fallen apart, he'd be the head coach at Michigan State right now. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, all these coaches have spent their whole careers working to get that Power 5 job. They didn't sign up to coach in the Mountain West. Mm-hmm. Kyle Smith got promoted out of the WCC to get to the Pac-12, to rebuild a program, to go to an NCAA tournament. And now he's getting sent back to the WCC.
So you think
sign up for that.
You think in 10 years, and I understand it for all those coaches, and I certainly didn't hear that animus at all from any of my Cougar brethren and friends and alumni and many of them that texted me yesterday when it came to Kyle Smith or will inevitably come to Cammy. But this is the AD. This is the one that was at war with the school. This is the one, and I don't know, man. I feel a lot of them saying, I will never be able to understand this, and I will never look past this. Go anywhere else. Go take any other job. Go be an AD at any other school.
What other AD jobs were available for him?
Not he interviewed for every one of them.
I mean, like, what other AD job was available? He interviewed, as Kyle said, for a bunch and didn't get him. He wanted to be at Ohio State, right?
Yeah, that's his dream job.
He didn't get it. He'll, you know, the next time that job opens, he'll probably leave Washington for that. I mean, like, it's a business. This to me feels like every other move that's been made. And I just, the idea of expecting or holding him to a higher standard after he went, what I would say is above and beyond for the Washington State program.
Yeah.
It feels unfair and just, what it feels like to me? Misplaced anger. And every Washington State fan has every right to be pissed, to be super mad, to be as angry as they want to be at a rotten system that totally jobbed them. I have no problems with it whatsoever. My feeling, though, is if you and I understand misplaced anger. Trust me, I'm great at it. I misplace my anger all the time.
Just
and
happened it, on the show.
It,
yes.
It takes me a few minutes to kind of figure out, wait, what am I really mad at?
Yes.
And I think I could be wrong, but talking to Kyle, and Kyle's probably the lens through which I make a lot of my Coug assumptions, that the actual reason for anger isn't Pat Chun, nor is it going to Washington. It's the final nail in a coffin that unfortunately has been being buried here for months, almost a year, and this was unfortunately the last one. I don't think you're actually that mad at Pat Chun for going to Washington. You're mad at a horrendous situation that this is unfortunately indicative of.
Yeah, well, that would require a level of logic and understanding, Salk, that sometimes the fanaticism of the rivalry,
that
Robbie Tobeck
it's not any of
hates
that.
Purple and
it's
gold.
It's none of that. It's
Jack
therapy.
Thompson hates purple and gold.
Oh, I hate purple and gold. Yes. We all hate purple and gold. This one really hurts to go to UW. It is unbelievable that he went to Washington. Seeing his face on the reader board at the universe at the Husky Stadium. Oh my gosh. But then it's like, what is he gonna do? Just sit there and manage a Mountain West athletic department?
Right.
He worked. He got promoted out of Florida Atlantic to get to a Power Five job. He didn't sign up to run a Mountain West athletic department.
Nope.
And this was the only job available for him to take, unfortunately. Right. So, and my guess is he won't be there for that long. Like just like everyone else, they come to UW and then they leave.
Yeah, he'll realize he's running an athletic department with half the budget of everyone else in their league. And that's probably why Jen Cohen left and Troy Dannon left and Kalen DeBoer left. And oh my gosh, this is going to be really hard to fight with $35 million a year when Maryland, Rutgers, and Indiana are making $70 million. Yeah, that's going to be hard.
But if you're Washington, he's the guy you hire. If you're Washington,
he's tailor-made for this job.
Yes. If you are Washington, he's the one that checks every other box other than being, about purple and gold. Yes.
Hire anybody? I mean, like, you've already got your two coaches in place.
Well, he knows the politics here in the state, which is really challenging in the NIL world. He knows the history of the dissolution of the Pac-12, 15 years in the Big Ten. He is tailor-made. When this job opened, I was like, oh, I'm going to laugh about Troy Dannon leaving for like 4 minutes, and then this is not going to be very funny.
Yes, because he's an unbelievable fundraiser, and that's what you're going to have to do. And
that's his great skill.
That's what he's done at FAU. It's what he did unbelievably
well. Not known to have
great
relationships with his coaches. Not known to have great relationships with the people that work for him. Mm-hmm. But he will raise a ton of money.
Kyle, if you were in charge of if you were now hired to be the Wazoo AD,
yes.
What would you do with the program?
Are you up for that job?
Yeah. Are you throwing your hat in the ring?
I'm available.
You go from managing Salk, and Brock and Salk and everything else.
Managing Jake Dicker.
Yeah.
Could
happen. Seems easy.
If you were, what direction would you take the program? Like, what do you do now?
I thought about this. I think if I were in charge of the WSU athletic department, I would go all in on basketball. I think competing in the NIL space with a 12-man roster instead of an 85-person roster is going to be much easier to they've got NIL challenges. They don't have a lot of money to spend. They could spread it better over 12 people. Mm-hmm. And then you try to compete in a 68-team tournament instead of a four-team tournament going to become a 12-team tournament. You're not going to be Gonzaga, but could you be St. Mary's, St. Mary's Light, still be relevant, still be nationally known athletic department? Maybe. It's not going to be easy to do an hour away from Spokane.
I think I disagree with that.
Really?
Because why can't you be Boise State football?
What is Boise State football? They're on their third coach in five years?
In a 12-team playoff, not a 4-team playoff, in a 12-team playoff now, that you're going to have more opportunity.
Is Boise State going to be able to keep doing that, Brock, in the NIL world?
If this was still a 4-team playoff, I'm much more with you, Kyle. Because this is a 12-team playoff. Because if you go into the Mountain West, you have inherent advantages over with your history, with your tradition, with your facilities over many of those schools that you're competing against. That if you can win that Mountain West and you can be the top dog as Boise State was in those years, and I know it's been some years, but if you can do that, you entertain that conversation. Yep. My nephew took a trip, my other nephew, to the Air Force Academy. And I sat in there on his recruiting trip because the Air Force Academy wants family and friends and extended family to all come on those visits to see everything that they're all about. And Troy Calhoun said, we're not, with this 14 playoff going to 12, that's going to change the dynamics here. We're not now going to become playoff contenders. And when they were 8-9-0 last year, I was like, man, they have won a lot of games. They've been double-digit wins for a lot of years. When you're not playing USC and UCLA and Washington and Oregon and those teams, and you're playing the Mountain West schedule, why not have visions and dreams of being able to compete for one of those 12 spots?
How did Boise State do that? They had Chris Peterson. You hire a generational coach, one of the best to do it in 100 years, and he makes something special. And the second he leaves, it all falls apart.
They were really good before Chris.
Is it going to continue, though, in the NIL world? Is Boise State going to still be good for the next 5-10 years? I mean,
I don't
we
think
know that worked
that great
then.
Right now.
I don't know if it's going to work now.
They just had another coaching change this offseason.
I tend to agree with Kyle. I mean, yeah, there's the occasional school that can make that happen, but I feel like the pathway to success through basketball is so, but yeah. But you've never really been known as a basketball power either. So you got to kind of build that from scratch.
Now we call it a 12-team playoff, and if you're coming from the Mountain West, it's really a 2-team playoff because that's the how many spots you're competing for.
Right.
Yep. The SEC is going to take half three. The Big Ten is going to take three.
Yep.
Big 12, ACC, will carve out a few more, and you're really competing for like two spots.
Yeah.
That's right. At least you're competing really for that. You had no chance to compete with that with a 14 playoff. So at least I know that's breathed some life into these other conferences and other members in the non-Power 5 schools.
You think this makes my dog look soft, this umbrella? Have you seen this?
I saw that. Yeah,
what do you make of the umbrella for Gertie? Does it make her look soft? It's built into a leash.
Gertie's fighting some already preconceived notions. She's a green like Frenchie. There's a lot that she's fighting. She's already kind of a prep school kid, I think. Yeah. The umbrella, I think it fits. She'll probably get made fun of by her canine companions. Yeah. Gertie over there. Oh, the trust Frenchies fund, baby.
Other Frenchies are going to be jealous, though.
Well, that's true.
They
her
hate
friends
the
Marshall and Nala.
Marshall and Nala would love something like this.
No, I was with Maura earlier. I think standard raincoat might do the job. It's a little less cumbersome. Doesn't draw so many eyeballs, I think. But I wasn't really buying Mike feigning the surprise earlier. I wasn't really buying that.
I did not purchase this.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh. I just saw this picture. This is crazy.
I was not a part of
Who
this.
Who would do that?
Heather Wynn did this. I want to be very clear. This was done by my wife. I had nothing to do with it.
You're right, Kyle. Hey, Kyle, this is very much a who could have seen this?
That's unbelievable. Delete my Amazon history.
All right. Goodbye, Kyle.
Did you hear us replay the No Way Jose campaign?
Did that predate you, or were you
around for
that?
No, I was. Yeah, I liked the other one. Hey, Mariners, bring in Safeco Fields Wall.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Come on.
Those were some heck. Those were
grassroots movements, and you got it done. By the way,
we did.
Jose was gone. Wall came in.
We got both things done. I would say,
Wow. And Jared Kelnick's not here anymore. Wow. Yeah. Imagine that.
The number of things that we've been able to do over the years. Is this it?
We don't need no Texas leaguers.
So ridiculous.
Wow. Yeah. This is the Safeco Wall.
Yeah.
We don't need no cans of corn.
Let me skip ahead here.
Just leave them, it's alone.
I'm glad that we didn't edit to short this at all.
Bleachers, bring the Mariner kids home.
Who's singing?
Struggle.
Bill Swartz.
All in all, it's time to moving safe,
come
field
wall. Yeah. There's more.
It's a crucial time in our baseball team's future.
So ridiculous.
Will we see another season of hit and run, punch and Judy, weak sacrifice flies, and failing to get men home in scoring position?
All right. That's enough.
All right.
Kyle,
don't
thank
you, guys
you for
need to
stopping
rank
by. We have to rank things.
We got
things.
An honorable mention. Let's go.
We do. Thank you, Kyle Brown,
thank you.
Super
go Coug, Cougs.
And our boss. Right now, let's rank.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
I liked when we were ending, I think it was the second version of the show, and we kind of knew it was coming, and we spent a while just like going through the sound files and just playing random stuff and reacting to it.
We need more campaigns.
That was fun. Yeah.
We need more campaigns.
More campaigning. We're good at it.
I mean, we're going to get into a campaigning kind of year. Yeah. We need some campaigns.
All right, we'll
Justin Mora, think about that.
Campaigns. Champagne with a campaign. Be number one.
What's my name?
I'm not going to do a campaign against a particular player. You've accused me of being mean, Salk, but that's very mean.
Remember when we got out to second base, we saw that Jose Lopez had left a depression there?
A huge mud puddle.
It was dry everywhere except at second base.
A big
clearly,
depression.
Like, he'd weighed it down. All right. These are the top things that were positive coming out of spring training. The top five most positive things to happen during spring training this year.
Oh, okay.
I got a couple of honorable mentions. One of them, Brock, I know you would like very much because you've been very excited about this guy. And maybe it probably, I guess, could have been a top five. But let's say Jorge Polanco showing that he is just a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Dude is just a straight up doubles machine, right? every time he's up, it seems like a double is soon to come. And so I would say let's put Polanco in our honorable mentions for just doing this.
And I know
swung on, crushed right field. This is hammered. It's on its way, and it's off the wall. Ty France will score. JP right behind him. The throw is cut off. Julio scampers to third. Jorge Polanco, a ringing two-run double.
He just keeps doing it.
That's what he's done all spring. I do wonder, as a guy that played 15 years in one organization, drafted internationally, signed internationally, like 15 years old, 16 years old. Like, I do wonder with Julio and JP and this organization and every player that talks about just kind of the loose culture, the empowerment that Scott had, I wonder if there's going to be some just new juice in that guy.
I think there may be, which would be great. So that's an honorable mention. So is that Dominic Canzone just flat out emerged.
Yeah, Canzone's in a different spot right now than when he was with us. He put a lot of time in the offseason. He's gotten stronger, first of all. He's moving better. And he's made a really good adjustments with his swing. His swing decisions so far in spring training are the best they've been for him forever. You know, and hopefully he can maintain that throughout the season, because when he swings at the right pitches, good things happen.
Like that?
Yeah. So those are my two honorable mentions.
Okay.
Top five things that happened at spring training.
It's because Chicken Parm wasn't on his list.
Oh, I thought you were going to play the clip where Brock's trying to convince him to get married.
No, we'll get to that one. Coming. Number five, Ryan Stanek arrived. I think if you didn't have Ryan Stanek right now, you'd have some really, really big questions about what this bullpen is going to look like, especially for the first month of the season and possibly beyond that. They needed to add another reliever. And certainly once Jackson Coar went out, it became mandatory. And just watching him two nights ago in San Diego, I was like, oh, I kind of forgot. Like, obviously we've seen him for the last few years, but just seeing it like in, dude's filthy.
Well, and not only did he arrive, and then he spoke and blew our minds.
Seems like a great dude. I mean, I know he's going to the enemy, so I'm sure Astros fans are never going to speak to him again.
Sure.
He's just supposed to do nothing and find himself out of the game.
Oh, this coming from a guy that you love the Habitats, and you sure love the Yankees.
Yeah, that's dirty.
Yeah, whatever.
That's different.
What? Oh, sure, it's different.
Because my programs are still around. They haven't gone away.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. All right, the arrival of Ryan Stanek would be number five. Number four, Brock, you knew I wasn't going to go too far without mentioning my guy, Luis Castillo. But I think what I've loved is the way he stepped up, and he really is now starting to carry himself like an ace pitcher. And it's not just the commercial that he did where he's the Rock. It's not just the nickname. It's not just the filth. It's starting to show some of that leadership, and Shannon Dreher kind of took us through that last week.
While we are on the Luis Castillo subject, let me throw in something else. I think we've seen him take a step up in leadership, which is a surprise to me, because he was very much a lead-by-example guy last year. And you would hear a little bit like Bryce Miller, when I asked him last year who has helped you the most, he said Luis Castillo. And that was kind of a surprise. It's kind of been a little bit of a mystery to us since he came over. This year, and I'm sure it has something to do with the trip that Scott Servais made to the Dominican to go fishing with him and catch the red snapper off the big boat, I'm sure a little bit more was asked in that regard, and I think Luis is totally on board with that.
I think that's important, and especially coming from Shannon, who I know was not necessarily all in on the Luis train, it's pretty good to see.
Yeah, I think that the actions spoke the loudest. He came in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
In 23, he worked himself into shape. We were there when the fastball was 90, 91, and he had to build himself up and build himself into shape. And in 2024, maybe there was a conversation on that boat. Hey, you know what? Let's make sure we're ready to go when camp starts. Because this team, and I'm going to lean into you, and we're going to really need you to take that next step. And by all accounts, and by the looks of it, certainly has.
All right, that's number four. Number three, Haniger returned.
He's a really hardworking guy, somebody that definitely leads by example. And he's somebody that you're always glad to have in the clubhouse. And, I mean, what he's doing for us right now, look at that. Look at that. That's gone. That is gone. I'm not leaving the mic now. I'm going to stay here. I'm not going to go to center. I'm going to stay here.
That's Julio letting us know. But the return of Mitch Haniger is not just important potentially on the field, but very symbolic. And seeing him in the headspace he's in the leadership position he's in, the smile that's been on his face all spring, I think has been very important to the healing process.
And now we get a Mitch Witch. 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Double Mitch Witch.
Yeah. Double Mitch Witch.
Yeah. Big deal, though, getting Mitch back. And he looked pretty good in that commercial also. He looked like he was having a pretty good time filming the commercial. That's number three. Number two, it sure seems like the players forgave and started to refocus. They started to forgive. They started to refocus. They started to move on from last year. I know those wounds are still raw. And clearly, it doesn't take much to reopen them for a huge portion of the fan base. But the players seem to be willing to move on. We'll see whether or not that lasts through tough times.
That's right. Talk to me when adversity hits. Talk to me when there's a slump. Talk to me when the struggle bus is, you know, maybe a couple guys are on it and just having a hard time getting started. But as for now, lead into this thing, an absolute positive over the last 6 weeks.
And then number one, everyone hit. Everyone hit, and it sure feels like because of it, it's going to be easier for them to buy into this general hitting philosophy. And I'll admit that I had some concerns about it, some questions. I still do. I think they're going to miss some of the power, some of the pop, and I wonder whether or not they'll take as many walks as they've done, as they have. But right now, you can't argue with the results through spring training. And if that gets them all moving in the right direction, and they can finally find a way to get through lousy weather in the spring, it'd be a huge deal for this franchise.
Opening day tomorrow, baby. Let's go.
Pretty great. Pretty great. Pretty excited. Well, there you go. That's what's today? Wednesday?
Uh-huh. Yes.
You want to run through like 30 Journey songs just to get it out?
Just to make it feel good. Yeah. Maybe play some Betty Boop. Now, we got to go. We'll be back tomorrow morning. Huge day for opening day. I think Scott Servais will find out. Definitely Katie Griggs at 9 o'clock. Definitely the boomstick himself, Nelson Cruz, at 9:30. Stick around for Bump and Stacey next. We'll catch you guys tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Until then, the hay. There it is.
It's in the bars. See everybody.